Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock. Your friends in horror since 2013. And add on an extra 10 years for 2020. So, I am one of your hosts. My name is Johnny Numb, and joining me tonight, as always, is...
Billy Crash.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And tonight, we are going to talk about something I don't think we've talked about before.
No, we haven't.
Yeah, we did a show a few years back about frozen horror. And I was like thinking, well, have we done a show about the use of fire in horror? And I don't think we have. So I was like, okay, let's do that. And I figure... Billy and I live in Pennsylvania, and we've just somewhat broken out of like a 4 or 5 week, it feels like, 90 plus degree heat wave.
Yeah.
Which I'm very happy about the falling temperatures. So, hey, why the heck not? Just add this to the extra hot pile that everybody's kind of bemoaning this summer.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway... Lots of uses of fire in horror, and we're going to discuss some films, obviously. But Billy, do you have any general insights that maybe date back to the cave times, when the origins of fire, or any interesting tidbits you would like to share? I think it's something we kind of, one of those things we take for granted in our day-to-day lives, and unless we're faced with a tragedy, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing, you know, fire is multi-symbolic. The interesting thing is fire represents seven different things. It could represent passion and desire as one, rebirth and resurrection. I mean, we have the phoenix and all. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. you go from burning passion and desire to the phoenix rising, rebirth. The element of eternity, you know, the eternal flame. Obviously, destruction, which we know. Elements of hope, believe it or not. And
sort of like the Olympic torch, maybe?
Well, it's like a symbol that salvation is near. It's long been an excellent form of long-distance communication, you know, due to its brightness. Think about, like, you know, the Great Wall of China. And I saw it in a couple of years ago. They had a guy racing in a car over... What they would do is they would have prepared bonfires on the Great Wall, along the Great Wall of China. And if somebody saw the Golden Horde, they would light their fire. The next observation group would see it, they'd light theirs, and down the line, warning everybody. And this guy couldn't outrace it. He couldn't outrace it in his car. He was like zooming.
Wow.
And, you know, so it can bring hope. It's also warmth, obviously. And it may signify refuge from the cold outside. And also fire on the horizon can symbolize like an inn or a safe haven for a traveler. So it doesn't necessarily you know, have to be obviously a bad thing. And also what we see, and maybe more prominently in horror films because of, you know, going back to the horrendous witch burnings in Europe. They did not do any... Salem witches were hanged, they were not burned at the stake, but purification, you'd be, you know, purification through fire. So, and that, you know, that could even give to the element of that rebirth and resurrection, you know, type of thing. And unfortunately, sadly, we're doing this the day after. Destruction-wise, we that incredibly outrageously horrific, and I hate adverbs, explosion in Beirut. I don't know if anyone has seen the footage of that.
Yeah, I saw it.
Holy hell, man, that ammonium nitrate explosion. It's like a nuclear blast. You know, blew out the clouds. I mean, the shockwaves. Anybody filming that, they were knocked off their feet. Over 4,000 people injured. Last time I checked, the list of dead was 78. I have a feeling that's definitely going to go up. I mean, You see this building implode, and it's like, oh my gosh, that, man, it's horrible. So
it almost looked kind of like that the second blast bill looked like that stock footage you see of like A-bomb testing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I couldn't believe it, and I saw it from several different angles from these poor people. Like, oh, there's a fire, and it was a bad fire, and then mm-hmm. it became a chemical explosion. So it was just really horrific.
Yeah.
And last year was that horrible one in China with that explosion in the evening that they had, which was just destroyed tons of stuff.
Mm. Yeah. So I mean, it's interesting that you bring up some of the uses or the symbolism of fire bill, because some of those I didn't even consider at all, and they're kind of obvious. Maybe like the warmth, the refuge, the hope.
Mm-hmm.
Kind sure. of. I was thinking more of, maybe it's because horror usually brings darker connotations,
mm-hmm.
that I was like, oh, I'm thinking more on the I'm like more on the purification angle, more on the destruction angle. Not that the other uses of it don't appear either.
No, you're right. Of course, it's a symbol for hell, which we'll get to soon. But, you know, the one thing I remember when I was a geology major way back when was, you know, we have a molten core of nickel and iron. And without that molten core, the Earth will die. And that's why Mars died. That's why it has no atmosphere. Its core, you know, became a solid. You know? Everybody's like, oh my God, volcanoes are so destructive. Yeah, absolutely. But if we don't have volcanoes, if we don't have that resurgence, you know, of magma bringing lava, creating land, creating separation, and bringing things together, actually, you know, we're going to stop functioning. It's important for what it brings to us you know, on the planet. And you know, even with forest fires, people are like, oh, they're so destructive, but all you have to do is pick up a pine cone, and pine cones are seeds for that tree. But they don't pop, they don't burst, they don't come out, they don't plant unless they're released by fire, like popcorn. You know, so it's like, you know, the pine cone is, once it's in fire, the seeds explode out of it, and the forest is reborn. You know, and we've seen that over the years with the region around Mount St. Helens in the United States, where they had that horrific side blast of the volcano. So it's all tied into the same thing, and I think that's part of the reason with the element of, you know, the good that fire does. That's why people were burned at the stake. It will purify them before God, and if you were lucky and you had the money, you could actually, in certain regions, pay off the executioner to strangle you first before you were burning to death at the stake, which is absolutely horrific, and...
Wow, to use your money to opt for that. Wow, I can see it though. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, those were public. I can't even imagine like viewing that nightmare. You know, the horror, the terror, the pain. It's just it's disgraceful. I actually saw footage of presumed witches. This was ridiculous, and it was in Kenya. People being burned to death because they were considered to be witches. And it was just, they were thrown into a ravine that was set on fire. It was one of the most horrific things. And I've seen a lot of horrific footage. I've seen things in real life. This was one of the worst things I've ever seen, ever. And mm-hmm. I can't even imagine, you know, it's actually really bothering me to think about it right now. I never want to see it again. You know, what these people were doing, and... throwing in their own, not only their own countrymen, but it was their own neighbors in town. These people just got this friggin' weird shit in their head that these five people were witches. And I remember, I'll never forget, the one gentleman, he was sitting in the ravine, he was on fire, and he was just sitting there, like, accepting his fate. And it was just so horrible to watch. And I don't know how, you know, why we do those things to... Even animals, you know, like, you know, do it to people alone. And, you know, in a horror movie, it's a different thing because it's not real. It's a detachment, and that's fine. And, you know, we can get into literary symbolism more, but I don't know, man. Is the inhumanity that we've cooked up is just insane sometimes.
You know what, Bill? I agree with you. And you know, one of the films that popped into mind to tie into what you're talking about, that real world horror that you're talking about, was a Witchfinder General.
Oh my God!
You know that's the witch hunt movie that really sticks with me. That one and The Lords of Salem to a certain extent.
Right.
But just so much of that movie is. It's an anomaly because you have Vincent Price,
mm-hmm.
who was instructed by the director Michael Reeves to, every time he tried to do something campy or a bit cheeky with the character, apparently the director would throw a fit and say, no, do it, play it straight. So I think, despite the fact that Price was trying to do his own thing with that, it led to one of his most memorable roles because it was such, it felt like such an anomaly from him.
Yeah.
Because he is terrifying in that movie.
I hated him in that movie, and I love, he's my favorite. He's my favorite of the old time, you know, horror actors. I loved him. And I remember mm-hmm. him even saying, this is a definite nod to the director. He said, It's one of the films it's like the film I'm most proud of, performance wise, you know.
Yeah.
Because like you said, he played it straight and cold. Cold as ice. He was such an evil fuck. He was just horrible.
Oh yeah, and I think that's why, if you were used to seeing him kind of in the, you know, as a bit more playful and a bit more humorous and his
like,
other
yeah,
movies,
I'm like sure, the villain you'd love to hate.
Yeah, exactly. A bit more of the literal mustache twirler, but here he was just kind of like, he like threw you off, I think, for a loop because he was just so despicable. But at the same time, he believes in this cause that he believes he's been tasked by from a higher power to carry out. And granted, that doesn't mean he doesn't have underlying motives to exploit that position, which come out, but the scenes in the town squares where, you know, women are being sort of propped up above,
right,
propped up on a cross and on straw and, you know, getting burned, it's harrowing stuff, especially I think coming from that time. It was, that movie came out in the late 60s,
yeah,
so some of the stuff it was showing was kind of I felt kind of transgressive at the time. I mean, granted, you had earlier in the 60s, you had like Herschel Gordon Lewis stuff, but that stuff wasn't meant to be taken seriously.
Right, right, right.
This was more straight-faced, kind of in the vein of a, you know, the Hammer film, even though it wasn't a Hammer film, so.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it was, I didn't expect to see what I saw, you know, type of thing. I was like, oh yeah, hey, here's another movie, and it's gonna be great because I'm gonna be seeing, you know, Vincent Price, and it's like, man, I can't wait for Vincent Price to die in this movie. You know, it's just like, when's he gonna get killed? I can't take it. Yeah, it was potent. It was a really strong, disturbing film, man.
Yeah, and I feel like the use of fire in that, going back to what you were saying, was the purification, but also like that element of kind of destruction, punishment.
Yeah. The sadism was like sadism for God's sake. It's like, I don't think so, man. You know, it's like, you know, and torturers, like the people who did the torturing, that was a profession.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who did the executions, again, the executioners, that was a profession. And I remember reading how people would, you know, go to beheadings, and if the executioner, like, you know, didn't get the head off in one swipe, they'd be booed, and it'd be like, oh, you know, he could lose his job over that. And it's like, wow, this is just so screwed up, man. It's horrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a lot of people tweeting about how they're surprised the guillotine hasn't been reintroduced in our current state of things. But,
no lie, Johnny. Just an hour before this show, I was actually thinking of the guillotine.
Okay.
Because right. I saw The Last Execution. I saw the film of it, and they had it down to such a science the guy was laid down, you know, hands tied behind his back. As soon as his head was chopped off, both the area where his head was and where his body was angled upward in this incline. They rolled off right into a coffin. The coffin lid closed. That it was like, holy shit. It was like milliseconds. It was incredible.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, holy crap, you know, just... And it's amazing. Usually people who invent these devices, they usually die by them. Guillotine died in the guillotine. The guy who did the brazen bull, they cooked him in it. You know, it was like, fuck. And that is horrible. Being boiled alive in a metal bowl, it's like, come on. Like, what the hell, man?
Well, crazy. I think it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, going back to that era of, like, you know, religious paranoia and superstition and concern over devil worship and witchcraft, I mean, it just the weird double standard of that mob mentality. It's just like there's all this hand-wringing anticipation for something that's so horrible, you know, and it's like, have we become so completely detached from... Have we become brainwashed in our mob mentality that this is okay, this is permissible, this is right because someone's coming out and saying, well, this must be done. So, well,
right.
lest you get in the way, you must fall into line because do you want to be up there burning with them? It's just, it's so messed up.
Well, it's what every culture does. Any perceived enemy by the state, the leadership, whatever, they must be painted as being inhuman. And this is the best thing for them. And this is the way they deserve to die because they're not human. They don't count. The Native Americans in our country weren't, you know, the Native peoples, they weren't considered to be human because they didn't have the good book.
Right.
You know, we saw that. You see that just like around the globe with anything. They're bad, like any enemy, you know. Look at any propaganda from World War II. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the Holocaust, yeah.
Sure, the way the Nazis painted the Jews, the way we looked at the Japanese. You know, it was like, you know, buck teeth and all this stuff, and they're dumb, they're not human, they're evil. Since they're evil and don't, you know, they're not men, go get them, go kill them. And it's just horrific. So you have, again, those elements. But it's funny, you don't often see that in, other than Witchfinder General, like all the horror movies that came to mind had to do with different uses of fire for like some of the symbolism that we talked about, like using it in different ways. Like The Thing, you know, at the end, we got to blow this place up. We got to burn it down. We got to get it into the snow. We got to make sure this thing dies so it doesn't wake up and comes back again. It was total destruction. And in that destruction, they were killing themselves. And they were so willing to do this because they had to, you know, save the world. And because they're like 1,000 miles from nowhere, man. And, you know, Wilford Brimley, who we lost the other day. I mean, we're doing this on August 5th. He died, what, August 3rd?
Yeah, it was very recent. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was his first film, and you know, he was one of the doctors in there, and Blair, and you know, we have to bring this place into the ice. We have to use this fire, and in the end, it's great because a couple of them survive, and they're like, "Hey, it's warm, but you know, it's not going to last too long."
It
won't last long though, and it's like, you know. But it's something that they had to do to hopefully eradicate this thing so the world wouldn't be infected. So it was a cleansing thing, but it was also destructive. If you think about, you know, it being hope, again, hope we got the guy, you know, hope we got the thing.
And even the hope is tenuous in those last couple of minutes of the movie, too.
Quite.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you've talked about the ending of the TV version, which throws it even further out the window. So
yeah, it's beautiful. They show a burning campsite and a dog leaving it. And I was like, that's perfect. Why didn't he do that in a regular movie? John Carpenter, please do a director's cut with that. Just add that scene. That's all you got to do. Add that scene at the end. Bookend it, baby. Bookend it!
I can just imagine the husky like running, kind of like running away from the campsite, looking back, and the orange is reflected in its fur, and then it turns around and just disappears into the darkness. That would be awesome.
Damn. Yeah. Damn. Look back in anger.
Yeah.
Sorry.
But you know what, Bill? I love the paradox of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, and it's something I didn't really think about until now, but you know, you were saying about how it's like, well, these guys are in this unique position where they have the ability to act, and you know, as Jameson Parker said in Prince of Darkness, I think it's time for us to stand up for what we are, which is what
yes.
they kind of do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because they very well could have, I guess, what else could they do in that situation? Because they are 1,000 miles from nowhere. They're stuck in this camp, and they have to stay inside pretty much all the time because it's freezing out. What else are they going to do with their time except try and fight this?
Yeah,
this invading force. But I love the sense, despite that, of the or because of that, of the altruism that comes out of it. They're looking big picture in terms of an apocalypse,
right?
For all of mankind.
Yep.
Which means that they can, you know, even though Gary's like, oh, well that's suicide. Hello, you know, and Kurt Russell's like, no, it doesn't matter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it just wants, it'll just freeze and wait for the rescue party to come back and find it. So I like how they quickly fall in line with that mentality, because it's like, okay, what do we got to lose? There's not much left. We may as well do what we can. So
yeah.
So maybe there is a sense of hope that weirdly comes out of that situation as it becomes more and more dire, as they're throwing Molotov cocktails in rooms, setting the place on fire themselves, you know. It's fantastic. Yeah,
it really was. And I loved that line near the end. It's like, well, we might not make it, and MacReady's talking, and within one sentence it's like, okay, we're not gonna make it. it wasn't even funny. It was just like, it's like, oh shit, let's just call it what it is, we're not gonna make it, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I like that moment, because he says that off camera, and we're looking, I think, at Gary and Malls.
Yeah.
Like, we're looking at their faces, and we don't laugh, because we see, like, they're taking it. They're like, okay, this is a dire situation, but we got to do what we got to do. And it is hopeless, but weirdly, through our situation being hopeless, maybe we can somehow, through a purification by fire, find some sort of hope for the people who are left after we're gone.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't mean to wax all Robert Frosty over here, but you
know. Robert Frosty. Robert Frosty the Snowman. Frosty the Snowman reads poems by Robert Frost. Oh my god.
Well, you know, Bill, something interesting that pops up as a motif in a bunch of films, but I'll, you know, just bring up the one that's the one I think where it all started. You know, fire is ghoul repellent.
Mm.
And I feel like that's Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah.
You know, where Dwayne Jones has the classic line where he's taking apart a table. You know, it's like, oh, they're afraid of fire. I found that out. You know, mm-hmm. just kind of matter-of-factly. And later on, you see him, you know, set a chair on fire to repel the ghouls standing outside the farmhouse. You know, they do that cool rig with the table legs.
Yeah, yeah.
And the cloths, turning them into torches. You know, again, it's kind of like, there is this, it's interesting, because you see one of the ghouls get set on fire, but he just kind of runs off camera, and you don't see what really happens to him.
No.
So it's like, it's not really used. It's more repellent than actual functional weapon, it seems. It's like, it'll get him to back up a bit and give you some space to maneuver, but otherwise it might not actually quote-unquote kill the zombie. You might still have to like shoot it in the head to actually really put it down. So
yeah, but it, you know, again, it falls under the symbol of hope, you know, keeping the wolves at bay, so to speak, you know, keeping the animals that fear fire away. Like, whenever you're anywhere out in the wilderness and you're lost, stuck, whatever, first thing, build a fire, and it's for two purposes: mm-hmm. keep animals away, and to give you a sense of warmth and hope. And, you know, a sense of accomplishment as well. You know, I made fire. You know, it's like, you know, I made fire. Yay! But yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, and that popped up in a bunch of probably too many zombie movies to count, but you know, I'll also say, because this movie doesn't get mentioned in conversation enough, and I kind of have a weird soft spot for it. Jess Franco's Oasis of the Zombies, which does not have a good reputation, but something I like about that movie is the characters don't have any weapons, and when the zombies come about, they revert to fire to stave them off and to keep them away, kind of. So I kind of liked in that movie that it was used more as a weapon, and that the characters had fewer options. But gotcha. Yeah,
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, you might not be missing too much.
I don't think I am.
It's not a well-liked movie at all. Yeah,
it's a Franco movie, man. It's like, come on, what am I missing?
You know, it's funny. That's like one of the only Franco movies I like. So
damn. All right, maybe I will look at it, and I'll probably like hate you later for it.
I'll loan you mine.
Oh, thank you. This is going to actually ruin the end of the film for people who haven't seen it. If you haven't seen it, you're crazy. You need to. But so here's fair warning. 1980s, The Changeling. Fire is a very important element because it doesn't happen anywhere in the movie until the very end, when this ghost becomes a pyro poltergeist, and he's like, I'm going to burn down this friggin' house, like a little kid setting a fire. I'm going to burn down this house with the changeling who took my spot in this world, and I'm going to just cleanse it all and burn it down and destroy it, and we'll start anew. And so it was more purification. And it was like, and it was, it's just so horrible to see this old man walking to his death up these stairs that are on fire, and it's like, oh my god.
Oh yeah.
And he was a victim. He didn't do anything. You know, it's like he didn't know. You know, he didn't know until, you know, the ghost told him, like, hey, you replaced me, you bitch. And it's like, I didn't know. And just,
yeah, it's kind of like one of those things where that, it's like weird because that movie doesn't really have an antagonist in it, really, does it?
That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
You know, you have people, it's like the movie Grace by Paul Soleil. You have people looking at a particular situation from different angles. That's it. No one's necessarily a demonic force, a villain of any kind. You know, if you look at the movie through the perspective of, my gosh, I forgot the character's name, man.
Jordan Ladd, or?
No, the name of, holy crap, I just gotta look it up. Pardon me,
yeah,
ladies and gentlemen.
Go ahead.
I lost my brain. It's work. Work is sucking a brain out of my head. Senator Carmichael, Melvin Douglas, you know, in one of his, I think this was his last film. You know, Senator Carmichael, he doesn't know that he was a changeling, that he replaced this boy who had been murdered by his father. And you know, so he's thinking that when George C. Scott's like going, hey, Senator, I have this proof that you're not who you think you are. The senator's like, what does this crackpot want? He's trying to harm me. How much money do you want? You know, when George C. Scott's like, you know, John Russell, he's like, oh, come on. You know, it's like, this isn't about money. You know, George C. Scott's like caught in this thing. He rented this house. He's got this ghost kid freaking him out with some of the scariest scenes that still get to me. And he's just like, dude, I'm trying to right a wrong from like 80 years ago or 60 years ago, whatever. And
George C. Scott's trying to sort of assuage his own, I think, feelings of guilt over the death of his wife and his child too, from the beginning of the movie. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I couldn't do anything for them, but now Ghost Kid, I could do something for him, you know. And
oh yeah.
Daddy, it's like, oh my god, how did you die? Oh my god, oh, I'm getting freaked out. Just like, man, it's got some of the scariest scenes, man.
Oh yeah, that seance is fantastic. I haven't watched that movie in a while, but there's just so much of it stuck in my brain that I don't really need to watch it too regularly. Yeah.
Man.
But that's a good one, Bill. And you know, it may be a bit marginal in terms of how it comes into play in the movie, but you know, one I was thinking of that's kind of uses fire in a similar way to the Changeling, and it's not up until the very end of the film, is the Island of Lost Souls
Oh wow, yeah. Great one, man.
from 32, which is just I think it's one of my favorite horror movies, actually. Charles
Lawton,
Lautner's
he killed it in that role, man. Killed it. Scary
such
as
a
shit.
such yeah such a perverse depiction of a mad scientist.
Yep,
Yeah,
and a true
so
sadist.
yeah, sadistic, flamboyant too, which makes it worse. Yeah,
Yeah.
but you know, you see all of this weird, like, mutated vegetation on the island, like these comically huge vegetables and fruits and
Yeah.
stuff. You know, when it starts, and then you see the manimals, the half man, half creatures that he's been experimenting on,
Yep.
crossing human and animal DNA. And I just like, at the end, it's like everything goes to hell, you know, for Dr. Moreau. And I think the last thing you see in the movie is the survivors are on a boat floating away from the island, and the island's been set ablaze basically by the mutiny of the manimals.
Yep, the false god has crumbled.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like, you know, I don't know if you draw that corollary to Nero fiddling while Rome burned, kind of. But it's kind of like, you know, Moreau was intoxicated with his godliness, basically, or a sense of, you know, being endowed with godlike power. And you know, it's kind of that interesting thing where it's like, well, how do you know, when you take down God and someone who claims to, or is a false god, and it's kind of like everything gets thrown into disarray, and kind of like, oh, we followed this person, and now, yeah, everything he told us was a lie. And you know, it's kind of like nature avenging itself, and then we go back to the, you know, the original cleanser, the original purifier, which is no pun intended, fire. So sort of like taking down the that sort of quote unquote abominable society that was on that island. You know, you feel more for the you feel more for the animals, or the half human, half animals, than you do for some of the humans in that movie,
Oh, hell
actually.
yeah, sure.
You know, so it's kind of like, you can only hope that through what they're doing, the implication is they actually find a way to survive amongst themselves, perhaps, that the whole island isn't entirely destroyed. But you know, I don't know. It's always
Yeah.
I'm sitting here speculating on a Island of Dr. Moreau fan fiction here.
Hey, man, that's a great story to write. What happened after the fires died down, you know?
Yeah, because part of me is like, I don't necessarily want it to be the end of their story, you know. But you know, because they weren't really, they were kind of byproducts of the experimentation, so they were acting according to their natures. So, but I guess the point of that is, it's like they've reverted back to savagery, perhaps. So I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was one of the first movies that came to mind is one that I actually don't really like, but the ending cannot be denied. I was thinking of Carrie.
Yeah, me too.
You know, it's like, you know, she's at the prom. She has a wacko, fundamentalist freakazoid mother. She's bullied by kids. You know, I'm just sick of all. Even then, I was like, I'm sick of bullying stories. You know, not that I'm taking it for granted or anything like that. I was bullied as a kid too, but it's like not another one. But you know, she seals up the high school, and you know, everything bursts into flames, man. She's like, you know, she's burning everybody. She's taking them out. She's creating her own hell from the hell that they did to her. Some of the people, not all. I mean, she went way overboard, just a little
Oh
bit.
yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
just a little bit. You know, maybe by 40, 50 bodies. I don't know. But you know, so she sets everything on fire. Everything's ablaze. and because she has no control over this rage, it just comes pouring out as she's drenched in pig's blood. So yeah, I mean, you know, your prom just gets ruined. I could see you getting upset, you know, and it rains fire, you know. She just brings down this element of pure destruction on all these people. They're freaked out. They're running for their lives. They can't get out. She's locked the doors. It's just really just, wow. Just, I just wish she didn't do the split screens. That killed me. I hated that.
Yeah, it kind of takes you. I honestly think that kind of takes me out of the action, because yeah, totally. it's De Palma kind of like, oh, hey, look what I can do. I can do two things at once. Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah, but I think that kind of makes sense that she did go overboard, though, Bill, because
right.
through her perception, because we see kind of how she's perceiving things, the mean people are laughing at her, but she's also imagining that the gym teacher who actually sympathized with her is also laughing at her.
I know.
You know, when that's not actually the case. So I think she's just so, at that point, it's like, I am so clouded with rage that,
oh yeah,
you know, no one's getting out of here if I have anything to say about it or think about it. And you know, something I think it's there's another interesting paradox, Bill, because we were talking about the thing and fire and ice, and in Carrie you have the whole gymnasium's lit ablaze, but she's using a fire hose, which conceivably could be used to put out the fire, but she's using that as a
yep.
as a pressure weapon on certain people. So I think that's another interesting paradox, and something else. I don't know about you, but I know sometimes I get embarrassed kind of easily, and my cheeks flush like
mm-hmm.
at the slightest hint of embarrassment. It's like actually embarrassing. Been a source of embarrassment for me for many years, because it's like anytime I'm feeling angry or upset or bothered or embarrassed, my cheeks immediately go red.
Right.
And there's also that flush of warmth that comes up to accompany that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think yep. that's kind of like, I think that's an interesting compliment in that scenario. She was actually probably feeling actually the flush of embarrassment and humiliation, which has its own sort of heat sensation, which sort of carried over into the actual real, okay, bring down the hellfire, you know, burn down the school type stuff. Yeah.
Carried over, huh?
Yeah. Maybe I'm reaching a bit there, but
no, just, no, you know, no, but no, you're right. You're right. No, it fits. It's perfect, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, Bill,
I don't.
Actually, I'll mention this one, because I think it would be remiss to not mention it, because I think this will be my fourth one. But I got to mention the burning, because burning is right there in the title.
Yeah, can't miss that.
Have you seen that one, Bill?
Yeah, my gosh. Man, when was the last time I saw it? Like a couple years ago again? I know I saw it when I was a kid, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty decent, like, early slasher movie, like, from that first wave after Friday the 13th.
Yeah, I remember... I remember Jason Alexander. They said he was cracking everybody up on set, even as a kid.
He's pretty funny in that movie, actually.
He's great.
Yeah, and he's got a full head of hair, too, so...
It was pretty homoerotic, too, like, what the guys were wearing and their little shorts and shit. It was like, oh, my God.
Well, do you think that was the movie or just the fashion at the time, Bill?
Maybe a little bit of both, man. I don't know. It was just funny, like, these guys acting tough and stuff. They got their little cuffs turned up on their shorts and all. It's like, what the hell's going on?
Okay, now I got to give that another look. I'm...
Oh, my God. I didn't realize Harvey Weinstein was a co-writer on it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why later in his career he thought he was a filmmaker and subjected all the filmmakers at Dimension to like unreasonable cuts to their movies. It's like, oh, I got a better idea. Yeah.
Oh my God. Wow.
But you know, it's the tale of the Cropsey legend and
yeah.
the cruel camp caretaker who gets a prank played on him, and he gets horribly scarred and comes back to seek revenge mm-hmm. years later
because he was horribly burned.
Oh, absolutely. And in that film, again, kind of a reflection of the early 80s, Tom Savini did the effects for
Yep.
Friday the 13th, and he did the effects for The Burning, probably I think because of Friday the 13th. And the effects of like the look of Cropsey is fantastic when you see him like at the very end when the film gets, sort of really drops the humor and gets really serious. And it's actually very creepy as he's wandering around, kind of stalking the last, sort of like the last guy. It's not a final girl in that movie, I don't think. But it's like, and all these things are flashing back for the final, the guy who's still left. And I just thought it was, interesting because, okay, Cropsey was burned and he has these. He looks, he, you know, he, his face looks pig-like, actually, because it's scarred so badly. And it's kind of interesting that he would like pick up a flamethrower, and choose to use that. I guess that's kind of poetic justice and irony that he would use that to try and dispatch the last person, in, who's, who, or at least the person who's last in his orbit, basically. So,
Yeah, I know that was no, it's a good movie. It's fun. It's fun.
yeah, and the Tom Savini effects are, Jason Alexander, Tom Savini. I think Fisher Stevens is in that movie too, actually.
Right. And I think
And
it's oh, I'm sorry.
no, go ahead.
No, I think it's like when you think of rebirth and resurrection, you think of something good and better, and he just becomes something worse because he was made that way. It's funny, you use fire to frighten a monster, yet he became a monster because of fire. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, I guess the only other one that I well, the one I mean, I if you want to talk about Firestarter, you can, I guess, but
Bill, I haven't actually seen it, and I haven't read the book. That's kind of a gap on my a gap in my horror credibility.
yeah, Drew Barrymore, man, she could conjure fire, but I really wasn't going to talk about that one. I know, like Palko said, I'll leave this to you, to Spontaneous Combustion by Tobe Hooper, which I have not seen,
Yeah, I'll
but
talk about that.
cool. The Devil's Advocate, there's only fire is only used once in the film, and
Ah, yeah.
in The Devil's Advocate, it's only used when Al Pacino as Satan gets really, really pissed off. He shrugs off like in a rage. He like it, the fire just like comes off of him, and he burns his surroundings, his world, and he re and he like resets the clock to try and snag his half son or son, and trying to get him through another sinful means to come around to his way of thinking. And so it's only when he's lost does just like just like in The Changeling, just like in The Thing, just like in the Island of All Lost Souls, like in most of these movies, fire is brought in at the end because it's like, it's crash and burn, it's just like, lay waste to the land, don't leave anything for your enemy. We're going to start anew. If I can't win, everything's going. And that's pretty much it, man. So in that case, it's like creating a rebirth, but not out of none of these are rebirth out of like really like, they're not good, they're not positive. It's like due to negativity. It's like, oh, this will be a good thing. No, it's out of pure rage, it's out of pure emotion, it's not out of logic and reason and common sense. And
Yeah, it's more like impulse. And
yeah.
and with Pacino in that movie, Bill, he's a huge, I guess he's depicting Satan as a huge egomaniac too.
Right. Who has some really good
So
words to say. He says
go ahead.
he talks some pretty good shit, where, worship that, never, he's a sadist, I'm a fan of man, it's like, I've had my nose in it since the beginning, anything man wanted, I gave him, and it's like, and he goes on, and it's like, oh man, It's beautiful, man. It's like, he's my favorite devil, actually, in film.
Yeah, I love how over the top Pacino is in that movie, but at that end point, it shows like he has like, oh, it's kind of like a how dare you reaction to what happens is like, and that's when the fire comes out. It's like, oh, you've spurned me. Oh man, you've really pissed me off, and now I'm gonna lay waste to, this whole thing.
It's funny. It's a because I was thinking of Constantine too, the film, and I know a lot of like diehard Constantine comic book fans either hate the movie or don't want to see it, and I get it. But I enjoyed the movie very much, and Fire was used in that tremendously because it depicted hell right from the beginning. You see the Warner Brothers thing get burned off. It's just like, it's Warner Brothers film, and it's like burning and blown away, by the wind created by the heat, which fires do, like these massive forest fires, they start their own weather systems of it's just insane. Even a volcano creates like lightning. It's just like, damn, and talk about pure concentrated fire. Holy shit. And Constantine, like he even used dragon breath to send, demons back. It was a weapon of fire. And I remember who was it, Gavin's character. He's like, oh, I was fire. I was born of this. It's like, oh God, and it's just great. Use fire to send them back to the hell from which they came. I thought that was, that's poetry, man. So.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I dig Constant. Actually, when I rewatched Constantine, I dug it a lot more than I did the first time. So,
I love it more and more each time I watch. It's one of my go-to horrors. It's a blast.
Yeah, I can see it as being kind of a strangely like a comfort movie actually, because it just kind of ticks off the right boxes, I think.
God's a kid with an ant farm lady. I'm like, yeah, that's gotta be it. And they're fire ants.
Tilda Swinton as Gabriel, just beautiful.
I didn't see Spontaneous Combustion, man. I don't know if you did. I haven't yet.
Well, you know what? I got to thank you for bringing it up and the fact that Palko brought it up to you, because I totally overlooked it on my shelf when I was looking for movies that feature fire in some capacity, and this is one of the fieriest of fiery movies, I think. An underappreciated Tobe Hooper movie, though I think a lot of his stuff is underappreciated.
Sardoz, baby. Oh, wait, whoa, that's John Borman. What am I thinking? Keep going, keep going. Shh, I'll edit that out later.
Holy You're gonna Jesus. Edit that out, son. Yeah,
oh my
I'm Sean
God.
Connery over here.
Sean Connery in friggin' red diapers.
But, basically, Spontaneous Combustion starts off in the 50s. There's this young couple who volunteers to be part of a atomic experiment, to be experimented on. And while they're exposed to radiation or whatever, the wife is pregnant, I believe, or she becomes pregnant over the course of their time on this military camp that's within spitting distance of a testing site. And what happens is they give birth to a child. The child has a strange birthmark, but through the birthmark, the child actually incinerates his parents. We cut ahead a couple decades. The kid is now Brad Dourif, and he's kind of like an anti-nuke type guy. There's this nuclear plant that's gonna go live in Los Angeles, I believe, and he's like a college professor, and he's down with the students who are protesting, the evils of nuclear power. And it's around this time that his fiery tendencies start to manifest.
I love it, man. I gotta see this like now.
And sort of there's a bit of carry going on, Bill, because it's like initially it's because he is getting like he's experiencing this extreme discomfort, or someone's pissed him off, and suddenly you'll see a spurt of flame come from his hand or arm or whatever, and then it gradually becomes worse and worse, and he starts to transform over the course of, I think it's maybe 24, 48 hours.
Nice, man.
Until he's kind of absolutely unrecognizable, but he's actually on a hunt to figure out okay, why am I the way I am? Why does this, there's this doctor who wants, who's really interested in me for some reason, mm-hmm. for possibly malicious purposes. What is all this? What's this conspiracy I'm kind of stuck in? And, you know, I think it's a great Brad Dourif performance. I think I think his horror work often gets downplayed because of it, just the movies themselves might not be the greatest, but he's always good, you know. And I think he's really great in Spontaneous Combustion because he embodies this. Not only does he embody the sense that, oh my God, there's like fire coming out of me, what the fuck is going on? It's almost like second puberty or something like that, only much worse. But it's like you have a real sense of sympathy for him. Like, even as he's incinerating people, kind of, it's like, my God, this is awful. It's kind of tragic what this guy is going through. You know, he is ultimately kind of a pawn in this situation, and he has a girlfriend who's trying to be helpful and supportive and do the right thing, but she kind of winds up in the situation herself. And it's a really good movie, you know, if you can excuse some certain aspects of it, you know. Mm-hmm. it's actually aspects I think that come from kind of the low budget. You know, there's actually a lot to kind of take out of it. Someone on Entertainment Weekly, the AV Club, Punchin' Spontaneous Combustion, and one of their film critics wrote a great, not really a defense, but kind of just an appreciation of the movie a couple years back. And I was like, oh, you made some really good points. And it's like, it's making me appreciate the movie even more. But
gotcha.
Yeah, it's like fire is cleansing. Fire is kind of it's very destructive, and in a strange way, the film does kind of end on a sense of strangely a sense of hope.
Well, that's funny because in Firestarter, you know, going back, I know I like blew sure. over it, but you know, government agency, it's one of those films, you know, government agency is trying to take Charlie, played by Drew Barrymore, who's like supposed to be nine years old in it, and she has pyrokinetic techniques, you know, she could set stuff on fire, launch things on fire. And I remember laughing my ass off because they had these balls of fire that were on a stick. It was just really really awful and stupid. And and so, you know, they're trying to, like, you know, of course use her as a weapon type of thing. And of course, she and, you know, her and her father have to use what they can do psychically to thwart this government evil and, you know, escape. So, you know, it's like fire being used as a destructive force, but for good instead of evil.
Yeah, and you know, Bill, I think there are definite, even though I've only seen like bits and pieces of Firestarter on cable when I was a kid, but I think probably the producers of and the writers of Spontaneous Combustion were thinking about that movie, you know, or the book, you know. I'm from what I know, there are some parallels there, but yeah. So
gotcha,
only Brad Dourif isn't summoning the power like inside his head. He's been endowed with it, you know.
Summon the power. Oh man, wow.
Well, Bill, you know, any final thoughts on fire? I'm sufficiently overheating over here. So.
Yeah. I think we burned up this show good. I think that's it, man. So behind the horror, right? That's the series?
Yep. Fire.
Fire. All right, cool. Fire's down. We had Frozen, so in another 8 years or something, we'll do something else. So I guess I'm going into Scream Out territory, and I'm going to do that right now. These are wonderful yep. souls you could find on Twitter. And here we go. Dave Weasel. Who's Dave Weasel? 5-time Billboard comedy chart topper and twice banned from a corporate booking agency. You can check out his Valley Boys podcast. He's out of L.A., of course, because he's cool like that. Find his podcast on Valley Boys podcast on Apple. So there you go. He's awesome. Check him out. Tico Romeo, Who's that? An independent film scholar and connoisseur of fine action sequences. He's out of Edmonton, Alberta. Always posts great things about film with some great little tidbits. Yep. Everything from horror to every genre, and it's wonderful. Seeing a tweet from him is a joy. Another gentleman who loves film and brings great clips and all is the great, great Skip Bolden.
Yeah.
With World Star Public Relations and Entertainment, award-winning film. He's also an award-winning filmmaker and producer. You can check him out on IMDb. Where is he? He's global.
Nice.
Boom. So check him out. 12 Night Horror. What does that stand for? 12nightsofhorror.com. Yes, they have a website. So if you love horror and Halloween, we'll have a scream. Come watch free horror videos, read reviews, watch trailers, find books and podcasts. And they're on a terror tube, man. Again, 12 Nights of Horror. Check them out. You will not be disappointed. The Clown, the Myth, the Living Legend, Bleeding Critic. Where's he? He does horror film reviews. He's out of London. Well, maybe London. I don't know. Everybody says, like, England, London. I usually go Manchester because it's like, I like the music. But anyway, it's just me. BleedingCritic.com. He, at YouTube, definitely check him out. He is a narrator like few are. He brings, he could read the telephone book aloud and he will scare the hell out of you. Scary oh, yeah. Stories UK, check him out. Where is he? He's scuttling around inside your skull. Tracy underscore TR. Who's Tracy? She is the woman behind Terror Records. She's the owner of Scream Radio, SCRM Radio. She's into wine, reading, and bacon. Perfect woman, man. I'm like, I love you.
Yep.
She knows I love her anyway. She's into horror. She says she's an introvert. I'm not going to argue with the woman. I love her. and she's part of the Fright family. And check her out on TerrorRecordsInc.com. She has a wonderful voice, a wonderful soul, an absolutely beautiful woman. This man has transformed his body like you can't imagine in the past couple of years, and that is the great Thomas S. Flowers. He's an author, horror author. He says he's a degenerate. He's not. He was part of Operation Iraqi Freedom, so he's a combat vet. We've had him on the show. He's amazing. He's the senior editor at Machine Mean, which is fantastic, and he's the author of scary books, and he loves horror, barbecue, and coffee. So you could love him. We have to have a party with them.
Oh, yeah.
My God, that'd be fantastic. Who else loves horror? Jean. Jean loves horror. And she is one Carolina girl. She's a mom first, but she loves horror. Michael Myers. God, does she love Michael Myers. I don't think anybody loves Michael Myers more than she does. She's into horror, toys, masks, Halloween, The Walking Dead, loves Stephen King, part of the horror family. She's somewhere on the East Coast, which is cool. You could also follow her on Instagram, again, at one Carolina girl. Kyle Hester, who is he? He's a filmmaker, and you can find him on Twitter at Kyle D. Hester. He's an actor, filmmaker, and as he says, and we agree, so I'm going to say it, no quarter for racism or bigotry. He's been part of Preacher 6, Zombie with a Shotgun, which you could also follow at Zombie WA Shotgun. The Chair Horror. He's a pagan, too, and he's happily married to the Tracy Ray. You can find him on YouTube. You could also find him on IMDb. Last but not least, hardcore horror fan, and that is Extreme Indie, all caps. They're horror fans, and they have website links. They're into films and filmmakers, in love with movies and the thriller horror movie Crawl or Die. And you can follow Crawl or Die and learn more about the upcoming sequel at crawlordietrilogy.com. I'm winded.
Oh no, Bill. Took it out of you.
Yeah.
Let me get you some iced tea.
Good, because there's a fire in my belly. Fire.
Well, you know what? If you're not too hot from that episode, you can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnny Z, but there's B's in the Numbs. Now I'm the one who's messing up.
No, that was beautiful. Bees and the Numbs. There's a real sick sexual joke in there. I'm going to leave it.
Yeah, that's a fetish to talk about at another time. Okay. You can also find my writing at crashpalaceproductions.com because Billy's a sweetheart, and also at 1428elm.com.
Oh, yeah, love it, love it, love it.
And what about you, Bill? Where can people find your stuff?
You could find me. Well, first I want to say, because I kept talking about Palico, you could find Palico at Palico Designs and also PalicoDesigns.com. He has one of the greatest horror collections I've ever seen firsthand. Absolutely amazing. As soon as this corona quarantine's over, we all have vaccines, everybody's like, yay! I'm heading right down to his house with some scotch for the man and going to look at his new stuff. But you can find me at Crash Palace on Twitter, at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this show and articles from our own Johnny Numb, as well as Kim McDonald, who's Horror Pixie, and a whole host of other great people. And you could also follow me at Noir Kink for links to my erotic crime thriller novels, and a new one, Debauchery, is coming out soon with a cover by Paul Belsey. You can follow Paul Belsey on LinkedIn. Last name is B-E-L-C-I.
And I know I've said it a bunch of times already, Bill, but I'm really looking forward to the next book.
Oh boy, I hope so. It's a doozy, man. It was a doozy to write. Doozy! The keyword is doozy.
I hope the doosiness comes out as I'm
reading. Oh, dude, it's going to come out and it's going to be like... Oh, I hope, man, if this works... Working on a fourth novel now, and the fifth, so...
Damn.
Yeah, damn indeed, man.
Yeah, you are a machine, my friend, and I'm inspired and envious of that, frankly. So.
Well, you're working on a novel too, man, and hopefully a stage play, and hopefully a screenplay, so...
Oh, all that happy stuff. Yeah, I just gotta whip myself into shape, yeah.
Get Vincent Price to do it. Tell him you're a witch.
Yeah, put me up on a wooden pole with some straw at my feet. I'll get on my Mac really fast, Mr. Price. I promise.
Witchfinder General coming for you. Yeah. All right. On that note, I think we better like end this before people throw stones or burning rocks. They'll throw burning rocks at us, Johnny.
I think we need to bring this episode down into the ice, Bill.
Like hell, you say? Okay, that's it. We're out of here. Bye.
See ya.